morning, members. There's lots to get done today, so we shall get started. Even though we don't have a quorum, when we get a quorum, I will call it.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members. To the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. We left off yesterday, or it seems like yesterday, it was Tuesday actually, was with the Parks Division, talking about their outcomes and performance measures. The point we're at now is to discuss the legislative initiatives. There were several questions that came up regarding parks. We are prepared to answer those, but what we're going to do is cover those individually and get back to the members who have the questions. And some of them aren't here right now.
When we have questions and individual members ask them, it is my assumption that they're speaking for a number of other folks. So whatever is in writing, if you would get it to us, then we will make sure we get it around to every member.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We will put that in a memo to yourself so you can get it out. I'd like to begin with Cortland Nelson again, talking about the change levels. If you go, does everybody have a copy of the presentation that we left you with on Tuesday, hopefully still in front of you? On page 14 is where we left off with the legislative initiative, or slide 14, I should say. The parks budget consists of the change levels of two change items, the first being a state park appropriation increase, which can be found on page 60 of your actual budget book. Or if you look at the fact sheet packet that you have, it's page number 33 of the fact sheets, actually. Everybody should have copies of this in front of them, so if you need copies, I think we have some extra. The basis behind the state park appropriation increase, what we're looking for is a $250,000 increase in each of the years, bringing it to $500,000 in 08 and $750,000 appropriation out of the state parks account in 09. These receipts, deposited in this account, come from the activities of doing the day-to-day business within our park system, the charges that individuals pay for services. A large part of this is not the entrance fee, which is statutorily established, but the fee that we charge or that people pay for services such as camping. What this proposal will do, will basically, what we're looking to do is raise camping fees on the average of about $2 per night in state parks. Camping fees are currently set, or they are set by commissioner's order, and they range from $11 right now for remote campsites to $22 for a campsite with electricity. Also, our camper cabins without electricity at this point are $40 a night, and with electricity are $45. What we want to do is increase those kind of, not across the board, but where appropriate, to generate this revenue that you'll see we'll be using to do work such as maintain park buildings, facilities, grounds, and utilities, protect and manage natural, cultural, and scenic resources, and to provide conservation, education, and interpretive activities. So allowing us this increase, this appropriation, will allow us on the ground to do more work to increase the camper satisfaction, our user satisfaction, which we hold so valuable.
Can you get a little more specific about slide 15?
Madam Chair, about the actual activities that we do with these things?
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to turn that over to Cortland Nelson, our Parks and Rec Division Director, to discuss some of the specific activities that they do on the ground.
Madam Chair.
Excuse me. Representative Gill.
Thank you, Chair Regini. It's kind of a question to the last point. Can I?
Yes, you may.
Mr. Meyer, Mr. Cortland, what about on the $2 increase? Then is there something, does that go then to seniors too? Some seniors called me and got wind that the park fees are going up, and they're on fixed incomes. They've been on fixed, one guy called me and said, been on a fixed income for 22 years, and you know, I can't afford $2 a night more. Well, it doesn't sound like, I just had that question. I was asked that question.
Madam Chair, Representative Gill, these fees will be these fee increases will be evaluated. They will not be across the board. We will look at certain sites and probably leave them where they are. Other sites, and including the camper cabins and some of our other rental opportunities, our group sites, are underpriced in certain categories, and we will raise those appropriately. We also, I want to remind the committee, have a number of ongoing and one-time special offers, if you will. For instance, our Discovery Parks, these are 20 underutilized parks, and to your question, Representative, those are really aimed at moving our user groups from our heavily used parks to our lesser used parks. And at those Discovery Parks, you get a significant discount for camping midweek and off-season. And we will be continuing that Discovery Park effort for the next couple of years at least. That would give individuals and groups like seniors an opportunity to have a reduced campsite, not an increase, but a reduced campsite, and to incentivize moving people to different parks around the state.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. That's a good answer. I'm not sure I can explain that one to the constituents, but decent answer. Thank you.
Representative Van Zyl has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, we're going to have some issues explaining fee increases of all kinds, and my question is, when were these sets of fees last raised?
Madam Chair, Representative, we raised our camping fees, or adjusted our camping fees. Some of them were raised, some of them were kept the same 2 years ago. Last year, in session, we reduced the daily entrance fee from $7 to $5. It is your purview to handle the daily fees that come and to make those adjustments. It's the Commissioner's approval that sets the camping fees, but all of them get brought before you as a matter of information, if not asking for your permission to adjust those fees. But the Commissioner does, at our request, approve certain one-time or short-term adjustments to those fees, and those basically, Madam Chair and members, are to incentivize activity to create new opportunities for people to come to parks.
Thank you.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Meyer, when was the last time we added a state park?
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, the last state park that was added, as you may or may not recall, actually was the Greenleaf State Park that was put into statute. We're in the process of working on that particular situation. We don't actually own any land in that park, right, in the state park boundaries at this point in time. Going on beyond that, Cortland has the rest.
Mr. Chair, Representative, in the year 2000, Red River State Recreation Area and Big Bog State Recreation Area were added to the state parks estate. And prior to that, I think it had been 4 years earlier where another state park was added. So two in the year 2000. Greenleaf was put in statute in 2004, modified in 2005. So those are the last three.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And a follow-up, are there any long-term plans for additional acquisition?
Madam Chair, Representative, at this time we do not have any specific sites picked out for expansion. We are having those kind of discussions as a part of our long-range plan and working with the Minnesota Parks and Trails Council and others in terms of looking ahead at what are the opportunities that we should be anticipating with the growth in population and the interest in outdoors activities.
Thank you, Madam Chair, but I believe you are looking at expanding current state parks, are you not? That's a continual a process you go through, isn't it, Cortland?
Madam Chair, Representative, this might take a moment to explain. The answer is yes. We are one of the unique agencies, representatives, in that we have park boundaries that you set in legislation. So each and every state park actually has a physical description for that park. That encompasses, in almost all cases, private lands that are within that park's boundary. And so we are allowed, under a number of conditions, to purchase properties for the expansion of existing state parks. There's about 260,000 acres within the boundaries of Minnesota state parks. We have title to very close to 220,000 acres. So there's a 40,000 acre total of lands that are privately held or publicly held, but not by DNR, within the state parks boundaries. We have all of those properties are ranked in terms of the value that they would have to state parks as an amenity, as a piece of property that would add to the meaning of that park. They're ranked from A to D, and this isn't a list that is hard and fast, but it's a list that gives us some idea if an opportunity representative presented itself. We had a willing seller who came forward, there was a change in ownership, or some other compelling factor, then we have a process that we have to go through that creates the purchase opportunity for that property. We go through the bonding procedures, we have money available, and we go through a number of steps to achieve that. Oftentimes, acting in our behalf, the Minnesota Parks and Trails Council then will serve as a broker for that deal, and we make an arrangement then for the purchase of that property from them. So at any given time, we have 6, 8, 10, 12 pieces of property that we are discussing in some manner or form with the seller.
As you continue, if you would start, Mr. Cortland, is part of your increase... We will have, let's do Representative Scalzi first, then I'll have mine.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When we talked at the last meeting, I asked the question about naturalists at state parks, and the answer was that there were 12 naturalists, but no seasonal naturalists. And I'm wondering, since we have such heavy use in the summertime and with college students maybe available, why is it that you choose not to use seasonal naturalists, and could we serve more people if we had seasonal people rather than the 12 naturalists, which seems pretty sparse for the state park system that we have?
Madam Chair, Representative, in the previous biennium, we had to make financial adjustments to our budget, and those were some of the cuts that were made. We have plans with these increase in appropriations that we would get with the proposal that's in front of you to add a number of seasonal interpreters in a number of parks around the state, and also some of those dollars would go towards college interns that would fill somewhat that same purpose. The tension that we have in hiring seasonals really has to do with their best and highest use. And we are very aware that this is something that we may have overstepped where we should have gone in terms of making budget cuts there. What happened was we had a disconnect then with the public, and the very thing that connected us with the public in a very meaningful way. And we are very, very interested in making improving that situation. Similarly, I would add, Representative, that the operation of our contact stations and some of our visitor stations is an hourly cost, and we have severely cut back some of those operations and would be very interested in extending the hours of operations for some of those facilities that addresses that point that you're making.
Representative Scott.
And just as a follow-up, when you say a number of seasonal naturalists would be added, what is that number? Do you have any idea at this time?
I believe our current plans for the increase that we're getting would be in the neighborhood of 10 to 15 individuals for interpretive activities, and then probably about that same number for interns at various places around the state.
And Madam Chair, I guess the reason that I'm making the point is that if we're going to increase the camping fee, they're going to have to get something more for that $2 to sort of satisfy the public that their $2 is justified. And I think this is the one point where the public accesses the park, and that's the face of the park to the public. So anything we can do in that regard, I think, would make a lot of sense.
Madam Chair, Representative, I completely agree.
Are there other questions from members? I think Representative Scalzi's point is a particularly good one when we talk about the changing demographics and the need to appeal to different populations. When I think about folks with young children, the naturalists are probably one of the best draws in my judgment, and I suspect in the judgment of a lot of folks around here. As you're going on to talk about that appropriation increase, you're talking about protecting and managing natural resources. One of my concerns is that the rate of the restoration of prairie within the parks and other restoration is at, we're going at a rate we won't complete the job for 100 years. With this additional appropriation, would you be increasing that rate, and by how much?
Madam Chair, we will be able to take on a few more projects, and there will be a few more acres that will be serviced from this money, but there will not be much of a dent made in that backlog of resource work. With the increase of these dollars, we're trying to take care of some additional backlog of maintenance. We're trying to do some additional resource management, and as we've just discussed to the representative's point, hire on some people in our visitor services activity. There will be some progress made in all three of those areas, but there won't be any great strides made.
Give me some sort of number in terms of additional acreage. It looks like you start about 450 acres each year. What are you talking about when you say a few? Is that 3? Is that 30? Is that 100?
Madam Chair, that would, at $1,000 per acre, if we were to be able to direct $50,000 towards that activity, then obviously we would have another 50 acres that we would be able to put to use. If we were to be able to stretch those dollars using any one of the work crews that Mr. Kartak talked about in the last meeting, if we were to have partners at a number of our parks, of course we do work with our neighbors, whether it's another public agency or a private landowner, and again stretch our dollars, then we would be able to move more aggressively in that campaign. We might use some of those dollars, since they are not tied to bonding, in coming back over some prairies that have already had some treatment and some other manipulation of those lands. If we were removing buckthorn, the total would depend on the opportunity that was available, the partners that we had at any given time. When we have you meet with Ed Quinn again, we'll give you much more specific information about what those possibilities are. But I would not want to leave you with the impression that we'll be making great strides in terms of adding additional acres for treatment with these dollars that we're talking about in this change order.
Representative McNamara.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Director Nelson, I just want to ask a couple of questions. Do you know, in regards to the most popular state park and the budget for that park, and I realize you may not have some of this information, so what the state spends per visit for the number of people that go to Itasca or William O'Brien or whatever one it is. And then I'm wondering if you have information on the 2-3 least used state parks, and has the DNR ever looked at, is it possible that those resources could be better, maybe as a state forest, a county park, and those resources could be better allocated to some of the other state parks? I've had a constituent inquire into me in regards to one of the little used state parks, a former DNR employee that really thinks it could be better managed as something else with the resources. And it seemed to make a lot of sense what he was asking.
Madam Chair, Representative, to your last question first. Over the years, there have been a number of smaller facilities that have been converted to another use, and I can't be very specific about that, but some of them were wayside, some of them were slivers of land. We have had changes where the lands were used in another way for another purpose. Over the last several years, we have not looked at turning over or shifting the responsibility within DNR to another agency. You are well aware, quite the opposite. We have taken on state forest campgrounds and have added some pieces to our property. What we have done is change the way that we manage those properties and have in 15 parks, we have moved to some type of seasonal management or satellite management where we do not have staff there full time. We continue to work with other DNR folks in terms of resource management. We have not focused on any kind of proposals to convert state parks to other uses. Were there specific issues within that question that you wanted us to further contemplate?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I think, Director Nelson, my point is seeing how the only state park I have in my district I don't think is being contemplated as being low use, I feel a little more comfortable than maybe one of the other representatives that would happen to maybe represent one of those districts. So it's maybe easier for me to ask. I just think sometimes we need to make those hard decisions so that maybe, as Representative Scalzi said, we have enough money for college interns, maybe in a program where they could do a lot of good. And I'm wondering what kind of ability are we really making the rational decisions? Are there some facilities out there? And do we need to be more fair in our evaluation? That's why I asked, do you have actually the numbers of the lowest state parks of what we're spending per visit? And I realize you may not have that. Maybe you've never developed that. I think it's a good thought process. In other words, we could see how good we're be able to use our money at William O'Brien or Itasca. And I can't think of the one that got that the DNR former employee, a great constituent of mine, was somebody's name down in southern Minnesota. He said it'd be much better as a state forest. And he said nobody even uses it. It's not really the right use. That was his personal opinion, but it really raised a thought process for me. And I'm wondering, have you ever thought about, or do you know the cost per visit that we spend? And are we, when you do that, is it all costs, fixed costs, variable costs? So it really shows how much we're spending for these few visits.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, two additional points I would make to the transfer. One is, at this current time, we have two parks where we're in negotiation about having another agency run it. We would not transfer ownership, but we would be paying them for the operation of that. One is at East Grand Forks with Red River State Recreation Area, and we are fairly close to signing a three-year contract with them. We give them the money to do it, but they're going to be managing it, which is different than what you're asking. I realize that. And we have another park in rural Minnesota where we're having that discussion with the county in that same type of contract, a service contract, essentially. To the issue of annual cost per visitor, I do have that. And it does not take into account overhead at the regional office or at the home office. It's pretty much just the straight-ahead cost to run the unit, revenue that is made, and then the average. And you can see indices within that that tell some stories and make some points. Others are pretty hard to pull out. For instance, at the Sudan mine, which you're aware of, that's an expensive operation. We have to run people up and down in a lift. We have pumping costs in the neighborhood of $200,000 a year. So the cost per visitor there has got an asterisk behind it. We have others where we have very high day use, particularly during the summer, and the cost per visitor is very low, but the impact of that visitation is marginal. People are in and out, we count them, but the services that we provide may be quite minimal. The impact they have on the park are quite low. But to your question, yes, we have that, and I can certainly share that if the committee would like to see that information.
If you would get it to me, we will get it out to everybody. Representative Ngo has the question, and we'll go on.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative McNamara brings up an interesting issue, and he asked if a representative who represents a couple of those parks might speak up. And as you know, Scenic State Park is just outside of my district. Schoolcraft is within the district I represent. The visitorship there is far lower than Itasca or even Lake Bemidji, which is also in the district I represent. However, and being in this field, we look at the quality of the visitation too, and I'm sure you think about that as well. When you have a visitor that comes for a more lengthy experience, maybe a more primitive experience, and with the mind, that's another example, the impact that you have upon those visitors is far greater, as and the impact upon their quality of life. And there are also commitment then to supporting natural resources and the other things that we're here working on. So I think when the DNR considers that and when I've worked in recreation before, those are considerations we make in our budgeting, you know. And as to the geographic importance of these parks, when you have a park such as Schoolcraft or Scenic, which is really the only thing that the immediate vicinity has, the only amenity, the significance of that park to those residents is far greater than one, say, like Bemidji State Park, which is a fantastic park, fairly high visitation, but Bemidji has other assets. So I would say that the relative importance of those facilities is very great. And why it might, in the end, when we might find out from the DNR that per capita visitation is a little bit more expensive, I would say the relative importance to their communities is far greater.
You would proceed?
Madam Chair, if there's no more questions on this change item, I'd like to move to the next change item.
Go ahead.
The second piece of the Parks Division's change item deals with Representative Scalzi's questions and some of the discussions we've just had. Part of the budget reallocations that we did, if you recall, at our meeting several meetings ago, our discussion on our general fund reallocations internally, part of that represents a $150,000 reallocation to the Division of Parks for State Park Interpretive Services. On your fact sheets, again, on the first page, it deals with the budget reallocations, and on the lower right-hand corner, you'll see a discussion of this issue. What we want to do here is take these funds and do two things. One is to develop and implement strategies for linking youth and technology with outdoor recreation. Madam Chair, your discussion is about children and the opportunities they have in parks, and the way Cortland describes it is very intriguing. They'll come into a state park visitor center and we'll have these beautiful dioramas and things, and the children will run right to the computer kiosk and start looking and going through that. We need to provide some opportunities to link technology and our natural resources at these sites, wherever possible, increasing our websites. Let them come in and perhaps print out a map to the whole park, plan their activities, see what the schedules are. But linking that technology and the outdoor recreation we see is very important and will be a part of this. Also, dealing with our changing demographics, creating a Southeast Asian interpretive program for some of our parks in southeastern Minnesota would be a big part of this. Working with interns from diverse backgrounds to attract broader constituencies to state park and recreation areas and provide seasonal interpretive programming are also the base backbone components of this change item as well. So I think we covered a lot of that discussion previously. Stand for questions. That is the state parks and recreation area budget. You can see this last slide here, what we're proposing for with this change item or with the governor's budget proposal for parks is a total of $81.2 million. A large part of that, a little bit over half from the general fund, 41.6. And then the next biggest part out of that natural resources fund where we're seeking to access some additional appropriations. Special revenue fund, funds go in there from our different accounts. And you can see there's a small piece of federal funds and other funds as well. So parks is heavily general fund funded. And that's part of the challenges that we've faced with this division in the past years. And Cortland has done a great job at looking at the division and the operation very entrepreneurially. You've seen changes in the past several years that we've done working with parks. You'll see a couple more this year related to park permits. We need to tweak them a little bit so that when we can sell them for the holiday season a little bit more efficiently, promote them a little bit more. Our interest is, we talked about reducing the actual daily fees last year to attract more visitors. We created a motorcycle permit to allow people to come in and promote through those people who are out recreationally driving in these areas. So it's a challenge. It is a hard challenge for us to maintain the needs that people have, but you'll see, and we've discussed, keeping that user satisfaction at 90%, 95% plus is something that we strive for. And we'll be doing another survey this summer, so we'll be able to come back to you this time next year and present those results. Thank you.
Before we go on, Representative Dill has a question. Representative Ansel has a question.
Okay, thank you, Chair Wagenius. I might have missed it. Did you put a number on what the backlog of maintenance is in our state parks? Did you put a dollar number on that at some point, or is that in here? I've been looking for that. And my question is with this, doesn't sound as if this fee increase is, I see a couple of mentions about doing some maintenance, but it doesn't sound like this fee increase is really going to have much to do with the backlog of maintenance, if there is any.
Thank you for asking that question, Representative Bill.
Madam Chair, Representative, that is a complex answer to pull apart. I assume by maintenance, Representative, that you mean the infrastructure, the capital projects that are in the park. And these dollars will not have any impact on that at all. These will be dollars that go to the regions for some immediate improvements, restrooms or campground areas. If we've got some deterioration of roads, there'll be some patching that could occur from that. But it will not address the backlog of capital development and resource management issues that we have. No, we do not have a complete list. As I said in the Senate on Tuesday, at any given time, we have a working list of many, many million dollars that we prepare in advance for the bonding session where this issue gets addressed primarily every other year. We have, as you've seen in the slides, a significant infrastructure in the state, and as with any organization, with any season, things are wearing out, other things are fatigued, there are natural disasters that occasionally occur, and we do have the responsibility of preserving and protecting some of those historic structures that you're well aware of, Representative, up in your district. So all of that rolls together for a huge capital development responsibility. The last significant dollars that you awarded us was in the year 2002, and there were $23 million that was awarded in that bonding cycle. That has all been spent out now, and we are hopeful in our preparation for next year that that will be addressed in a more meaningful way. The challenge of putting together a comprehensive list is that it's, other than the measurements of certain items, such as the linear feet of water, pipe, the linear feet of sewage line, the miles of roads, the linear foot of trails, the square footage that we have in our buildings, to prioritize them would take a person a year for all of the structures that we have in Minnesota State Park. So we just don't have that luxury of producing that down to that accurate level. I would also want to add, and not to diminish what does go on, is that Management Resources in DNR does have formulas that they apply particularly to buildings for roof replacement, for certain recycling of buildings and updating of buildings. So we are not alone, and there is progress being made, but we own two-thirds of the buildings in all of DNR, and so two-thirds of the costs that occur on any measurable basis, whether it's annually or on a 5-year plan or a 10-year plan, are going to be in our world. And we have yet, I believe it's fair to say, come up with a formula to address that in a meaningful way that would get to the heart of your question, Representative.
Can I ask a little more?
Representative.
Well, one of the things that I have some concern about is that we don't have, it doesn't seem that we have quite as good a handle on that. When I asked the National Park Service that answer, or that question, they will give me an answer in millions off the tip of their tongue and have all the projects listed, and we know what we're dealing with. But mainly it seems like, you know, we ought to be, as we expand and add new buildings, give you an example, the Grand Portage, the building. I mean, that's going to cost money in the future to maintain it. Mm-hmm. And you know, sure, I'm glad we're doing that. It's in my district, and it's a great addition. It's an entry point into the state. But just seems like we should be recognizing that in our operating costs more than being dependent upon. And maybe I'm naive in how things really work around here, but it would seem like in the operating costs, in the operating statement of the parks, we should have some reflection that weights more of the costs, or the actual cost, weighted into the operating cost so that we collected fees, which would be against what the seniors called me about. I mean, realistically, it has a cost. maintenance has a cost, and long-term maintenance, particularly capital, like what you did at the lighthouse. You know, these projects you've been doing there, that was done with bonding, as I recall. But it just, I don't know, I'm not quite as comfortable with that as I maybe should be. Maybe it's because I don't understand.
One summary comment, Madam Chair, Representative. With regards to Graham Point, Jack points out one of the issues that I don't think has been dealt with, and what the representative is referring to, is when bonding comes and a building is built, it is not tied together with money, cost per square foot per month to operate it. That money has to come from somewhere else already in the system. And I would consider that to be a flaw that some other systems have fixed and have put into place, so that when there is a new structure that comes, there are dollars so that that building can be maintained. And we do not have that system here. Second, Representative, I have a list with me of $30 million in immediate needs in Minnesota State Park. So we are not without a pretty clear understanding of what are the critical needs, and those throughout the state and in a number of different situations where we could use capital dollars. What we don't have, to your satisfaction nor to mine, is beyond that. What's the totality of the needs from all these measurables in capital development and rehab and historic preservation? And we will have to measure those, because we will not be able to come up with the exact dollar figures on the time frame that we have.
Well, Grand Portage came up, so I wanted to ask, I know that you met with Senator Bach and I, and we discussed some of Grand Portage Visitor Center. It's soon to be under construction. How will that, can you explain to the committee how that was partnered so that we don't have all that expense that we would have if we went that on our own in terms of DNR? And how is that going to be staffed and operated, and from what budget will that be paid for?
Madam Chair, Representative, to your first point, this is a new visitor center that will be right at the border between Canada and the United States on Highway 61 at Grand Portage State Park. The partnership is essentially between ourselves, the Grand Portage Tribe, and MnDOT. MnDOT is going to be contributing approximately half of the capital development dollars, and those come from border-related issues, and I'm not quite sure what the background of that is, but I know it's some federal dollars that come. As it is with Gooseberry State Park, there will be a public access, there will be free access to that part of the park. So in a session coming, you will hopefully be passing a piece of legislation that allows free access to Grand Portage State Park for all of those visitor services there. We will, in order to find the money to operate, we will have to look at other sources within the agency. We will certainly be approaching tribal leaders to see if they can contribute staff, if they can contribute, which they have indicated they will likely do for part of the interpretive effort. But some of the hard dollars that we will need for the cost per square foot per month for that facility, we do not have identified at this point. It will likely be in the neighborhood of $50,000 to $100,000 per year for the building and the staffing of the building.
One last question on that point. Do we, in the Director Nelson, do we have any places where we partner other visitor centers in the state, these border, you know, other state, Iowa, North Dakota, places where interstates, example, come in? And are they closed? And is it on, you know, do MnDOT have partnerships and they're closed? I'm worried that we end up building the thing and then we don't have it open.
Madam Chair, Representative, we don't have any of those facilities at any other of our parks. This is really
this
one
is
of
unique.
A
okay.
Representative Ann.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is much more global. That might be good, that might be bad. Within the big number recommendation, what would you say would be the ratio of fee dollars to the big number in the request? How much of the total recommendation to us translates into fee increases.
Madam Chair, Representative, if I understand your question correctly, all of it except the $150,000 annually that will come from redirected DNR dollars.
Madam Chair, Representative Anzos, the fee increase that we're talking about in this budget, in this section of our budget, relates to the campground services, and we're estimating that's going to be about $250,000 a year, I believe. It'll go into effect January 1st, 2008, so that's what those numbers reflect. But that's the only increase we're talking about doing, and we would do that most likely anyway. We're just looking for access to those dollars once they're deposited into the Natural Resources Fund. Other payments that we receive to operate the parks, you can see on this pie chart, the Natural Resources Fund and the Special Revenue Fund make up where the revenues that people, the revenues that we take in from people for services, park entrance fees, campground fees, what they're spending at the parks that we're providing services for, those where those payments go. Fee increases are very minimal, as we discussed. The rest of the other receipts that we would capture are deposited in those accounts. So there's two different parts of that question, I believe.
Thank you.
Okay. We're going to now go on to our next group, I think. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, at this time I'd like to bring up Director Forrest Bowe from our Trails and Waterways Division. In your packets, you should have the presentations for Trails and Waterways and Ecological Services. And also at the end of today, we will be handing out the presentations for Fish and Wildlife and Enforcement for you to review and kind of do a little homework on. So don't lose them, but I'll have extra copies because it's my goal to get through those as soon as possible as well. And with that, Forrest is going to kind of just walk through quickly some of the background information so we can get right to the change items, I hope so.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. Forrest Bowe with Trails and Waterways Division. This morning we're going to talk a little bit about, start out a little bit about our 06-07 budget. As you can see from the first slide here, approximately 73% of the Trails and Waterways budget is made up of dedicated funds from the Natural Resources account. Those include dedicated snowmobile funds, ATV funds, off-highway motorcycle funds, and water recreation funds. Another point of interest here for you would be that in the Trails and Waterways Division, we have about 3.8% of our budget is general fund, so a very small percentage of general fund. We also have some federal funds that come into the division. You see the 10% up in the upper right hand. That is through the federal gas tax program. There is a lot of funds that come to the division that we in turn give out to grants through the federal recreational trail program. So we take those funds in. Most of those go back out to local units of government for other trail projects. We also have some game and fish funds. Those come to the division through the Clean Vessel Act, Sports Fish Restoration Act, and the Boating Infrastructure Program. So basically water recreation funds, again, used in the division for public access and also grants to local units of government. The core function of the Trails and Waterways Division is to provide access to outdoor recreation and enhance opportunities to connect people to natural resources through a system of trail and water recreation facilities. And I want to stress the idea that we really connect people to the natural resources. We do that through creating a system of non-motorized recreation trails, through a system of water recreation opportunities, and through motorized recreation. Priority outcomes for the division are to provide high-quality recreation opportunities that satisfy diverse and increasing demands. Another priority is to maintain a healthy natural resource base and provide broad public access to natural resources. In the next few slides, I'll walk through and illustrate some of these. Our first priority outcome is to provide high-quality recreation opportunities that satisfy diverse and increasing demands. So I want to talk a little bit about some increasing demands that really drive some of the things we look at. We know that there has been a very large increase in demand of off-highway vehicle trails as identified through increased registrations, and you can see the numbers there on in front of you. We have also have quite a high number of registered snowmobiles, although that has stayed quite stable now over the years. The number of registered licensed boats is stable or continuing to rise slightly. So for the motorized registrations, things are stable to rising. We also know that we have increased demand for our bike and hiking and walking trails, and we have surveys that suggest that 54% of the Minnesotans walk or hike, and 29% of Minnesotans consider themselves as bicyclists. So again, looking at those demands. It's important to note, however, that even though there's a lot of demand, the availability of land for trails is becoming increasingly more constrained, and that challenges our ability to meet the outcome. As an example of satisfying the diverse and increased demands, state trails provide numerous and diverse benefits. Some of those benefits are trails can provide, they're a key element in providing improved health for Minnesotans because they provide a convenient and inexpensive way to exercise. They also provide economic benefits to communities and enhance tourism. They also provide transportation corridors. Trails provide environmental benefits as well. For example, when you think about a lot of our railroad grade trails, many of these provide buffers to rivers or buffers to streams. They also provide wildlife corridors where in some places of the state might be the only unplowed land in that area. And again, it's important to note that these recreational opportunities connect people to natural resources. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. In the division, we work very closely with local trail associations, trail user groups, and communities to plan, acquire, and develop and manage the state trail system. You can see our target there of acquiring 130 new miles of trail by the end of the fiscal year 09 and develop another 87 miles of trail. Most of the state trail acquisition and development is funded through capital budget. We have about 1,000 miles of trail that has been authorized and remains on the books to be developed. Another priority outcome for the division is a healthy natural resource base. Again, trails provide and can enhance the ecological value of land by allowing us to protect, manage, and restore native plant communities along trails. We can also help to educate users through interpretation. This is really important because in many cases, some of the only opportunities that our urban populations will have to view natural resources is through their form of recreation. So if you think about a bicyclist from an urban area and making use of one of our trails, stopping along the trail, visiting one of our interpretive signs of the trail where it talks about the value of a wetland or where our clean water comes from. In many cases, those folks that would experience that recreation probably wouldn't get that in a different kind of setting. We've completed identification and quality rating of native communities on 6 of our rail trails, but we've got a lot of work to do in that area. We also purchased...
Excuse me for just a minute. There's a question I have a question
I'm sorry.
To. Representative Small.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Bowe, you talk about the trail miles that we would like to increase in recreation trails in the state of Minnesota, and I'm grateful for that, and I hope some of those come up to Lake Bemidji and finish the Paul Bunyan Trail. However, as you know, spending a lot of time up in our area too, that some of those trails are deteriorating pretty rapidly. Following up on a question that Representative Deal had earlier, it's very glitzy, sexy, politically successful for us to bring trails home to our districts. However, when the trails that we have are deteriorating, maybe you could respond to how responsible is that for us, and how would we as a legislature perhaps consider budgeting for ongoing maintenance as opposed to just bringing home the trails to our districts?
We've got a slide in about two slides from now that will talk about some critical trends, and I think I'll be able to point out a critical trend in that area, and I'd be maybe I can answer your question better at that point.
Okay.
But on this slide, you have a 2007 target. We're talking in this budget about 2009. Is that slide coming up?
I do not have another slide. The target is yet to be completed in fiscal year 2007, and that's what we show on this particular one. In this area, our target is to maintain our existing restorations that we've completed over the years.
So with the 2009 budget, if we were to carry this out and look at what we're actually appropriating money for, we would not see any increase whatsoever in the number of acres.
That's correct. We're going to maintain what we've already restored.
I think it would be helpful if your slide were to show that.
Okay. And finally, it's the Trails and Waterways' responsibility for providing the broad public access. We do that through a variety of ways. We provide the state trails. We provide trails in our state forests. We provide a system of grant and aid trails where we provide funding for local units of government. We provide opportunities through 28 canoe and boating routes throughout the state. We have 10 accesses and harbor sites on Lake Superior. We have nearly 1,600 public accesses to lakes. And I'll switch to the next slide here and talk a little bit about fishing piers as an example. There are just over 300 fishing piers and shore fishing areas that provide access to the non-boating public. We have about 50 projects that are awaiting to be funded in fishing piers, so a very popular program for us. We provide the funding and technical expertise on the site location, whether they can catch fish there, and we help with the facility installation. The local unit of government then provides the ongoing maintenance for that. They provide the land. And again, most of the fishing piers are funded through the capital bonding budget.
So if in this slide, just like the last slide, you have a 2007 target, but no 2009 target.
Madam Chair, members, as Forrest just said, the funding for the fishing pier program is basically dependent on capital budget requests. So the target you see here is based upon our last capital budget appropriation. We can come back and talk about where we would like to see this program go, but without that tied capital budget piece, our future target is just going to be vague. But we'll get some more information to you on that.
Madam Chair, history has shown that we're able to do about 5 new fishing piers or shore fishing sites annually.
It's hard for us to interpret these slides. If when I go back and look at this one, you're depending on capital, but you're saying, oh yes, we're going to get it. And then I look back on the outcomes and measures of what we're going to do alongside the trail, then it's totally flat. But we don't know that by looking at the slides. It's just there's a consistency piece that's hard for us to understand, or hard for me to understand anyway. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is not a budget question necessarily, but I'm just wondering, in terms of the fishing piers and the accessibility of people to fishing in our scenarios that DNR is looking after, is it your responsibility, or is it the Department of Health, or who works with you on the notifications of some of the limitations of fishing, for example, you know, in terms of the mercury poisoning and so on that are apparent in our fish? Is that something that your department takes responsibility for? Is it something you work with the Minnesota Department of Health, or who actually is responsible for that?
Madam Chair, Representative Clark, we do not have direct responsibility in the Division of Trails and Waterways. I know that our fisheries people work with the Department of Health and inform them. Our role in that would be to put up signing and those kinds of things at our public access points and at the fishing pier locations.
Madam Chair, just a final question on that. Is that something that you know, that you're keeping track of, so if the sign goes down, another one is put up? And
Madam Chair, Representative Clark, yes. We have folks that visit these piers on a quite a frequent basis to inspect the pier, make sure that it's still afloat and all the signs and safety items are in place.
Representative Clark, perhaps you would want to talk to the folks when they come to talk about fisheries and the lights. When people get their licenses, okay, they're most likely to pay attention to the cautions that need to be given.
Thank you.
In order to satisfy some of our priority outcomes, I want to take a minute and look at some critical trends in Minnesota. We've talked a bit about capital funding, and this is a critical trend in that requests continue to come in to continue the trails throughout the state. Those local communities want to be included to gain economic health and other community benefits. As you can see by the slide, the forested area of the state is experiencing significant growth and will continue to do so. There's also significant demand for motorized and non-motorized trail opportunities. And again, the land base that we're able to put those trails on is becoming increasingly more complex in order to put those facilities in place. The greatest growth that we see is projected to be in the Twin Cities and the suburban areas around the Twin Cities. We also know that those participation changes will increase. Again, if you look at some of the surveys, there's an increase in biking, hiking, ATV riding, kayaking, and camping. Second critical trend, which may get at Representative Moe's point, has to do with trail miles and funding. So as more trails are open for public use, available operation and maintenance funding is kind of maintained at a minimal level. And almost no funding is available for the types of things in that previous slide, like our vegetative management. So what we're able to do is just maintain what we've done in the past. The graph shows how trail operation dollars has not kept pace with the amount of miles that have been authorized and developed through the legislative initiatives.
Madam Chair, if there's no further questions, I'd like to move into the legislative initiatives related to the Water and Waterways budget.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Bowe, Mr. Meyer, maybe you're going to talk about this a little bit more, but I guess I'm looking at your graph, critical trend, non-motorized recreation. There's a the significant gap there. Is there an implication here that there is a $2 to $3 million increased maintenance need, and perhaps you're not able to say that because it's not in the governor's budget? Or I'm not sure if you are you planning on, Mr. Meyer, talking about that a little bit more as you go forward?
Madam Chair, Representative Moe, one of the budget change items deals with non-motorized forest recreation that we have here, but the trend here that you see is a function of several things. One is that most all of our trail systems, as we're going to see in the first change item, have dedicated funding streams attached to them. Snowmobiles, water rec, all of our motorized stuff, they have a fee structure in place to do the grant and aid, to do the maintenance and the work activity that needs to be done. Non-motorized, we do not have any type of user pay system there. It's heavily general fund funded. It's mostly all general fund and lottery and loop funded, as you can see here. A couple more million dollars, and we might not have any operating budgets on this trend, but I'm just on the side that we laugh about it, that line goes up, our money goes down, we can't even get the money out. So it's a serious issue we need to deal with, and it's one that we don't have any easy answers for. So thank you for your awareness.
We have lots of questions on this now. Representative Anza.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To your last point, is it fair to conclude then that users of motorized recreational activities are paying their way and users of non-motorized recreational activities are not?
Madam Chair, Representative Anzell, I believe the way this has been viewed in the past is the users of the non-motorized are also paying into the general fund with their general tax receipts, therefore they benefit, they are paying into that. So there is a relationship, whether it's a direct relationship or not, is a question that you folks need to make a judgment upon, I suppose.
To that point, Madam Chair.
To that point.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Vels, you raise an interesting issue. Howard, just remember that, I'm a motorized and non-motorized recreation user, as are you, the relative impact of our motorized recreation is significantly greater, and the cost per person who's doing that is also significantly greater. So the established fee structure is in place to take care of that. So
I would observe to Representative Anzell, if you look back on the first, on slide number five, the department gives you the percentage of Minnesotans that are bicyclists and the percentage that walk, but doesn't give you the percentage of folks who use all-terrain vehicles or snowmobiles or boats. Those percentages, and it's just an eyeballing it, are considerably lower. So we're spending a lot of money for a considerably smaller portion of our population. So there are always two ways to look at numbers, and it would be helpful if in the future the department would put down the percentages of Minnesotans and not do the percentages for one and use a different measure for the rest.
Madam Chair, I do have those numbers just for information. According to the study, the 2004 to 2014 looking ahead study, it shows about 10% of the population involved in ATV activities.
Today?
That's projected.
And today is?
We've got 240,000 registered ATVs. I can't tell you exactly what the percentage of the population today is.
It would be helpful because the other numbers are in today's figures, not projected figures.
The
bicyclists and walking is in today's figures, not projected figures. So it would be helpful to have that for members as we go on. We have other questions. I think I have three. Representative Galsi is next, then Representative Joe.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Actually, the percentage is like 4.8% if we assume there's 5 million people in Minnesota and there's 240,000 ATVs. It looks to be about 4.8%. I could be corrected. Maybe somebody has a calculator. I just did it by longhand. But so I mean, there's a lot of time that we're spending on that, and which leads me to the question: when we talk about, we have 29% of our people bicycling, and we're talking about the interpretive signs on the bicycle trails. So a bicyclist could look at a sign that talked about the value of a wetland, and I'm wondering if you do that for the ATV trails. Do you do interpretive signs, or are we assuming that they're going too fast and don't want to read an interpretive sign? I mean, is it a matter of education that we want to tell everybody the value of a wetland?
Madam Chair, Representative, we do provide those interpretive signs on all of our trails as we can. At the parking lot, we provide kiosks and maps and do as much interpretation as we possibly can, no matter what trail.
And as sort of a follow-up back to your the critical trends we're talking about, and I guess I missed the figure of the critical trend for the increase in recreation in the metro area. I'm carrying a bill from Metro Parks, which is part of the state park system, and I'm wondering if you could just expand a little bit on that and talk about the trend and how many people we're serving in the Metro Park system. Do you have that information, or could you get that to us?
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't have the number of people that we're serving in the metro area. But clearly the graphic was meant to show how the metro area and surrounding counties is the place of greatest growth between now and 2025.
And just as a follow-up, I believe the metro area is approximate, or the general metro area is approximately half of the population of the state. So when we talk about metro parks and trails and waterways and all that, I think that's an area that we really have to look at. And I don't see those numbers going down in the future, and maybe you know the projections for that. But I think that it's something that we have to be acutely aware of as people have fewer and fewer resources to access some of the wonderful facilities that we have in outstate Minnesota. We're going to have to put a little bit more emphasis where the population actually is, which relates to Representative Moe's question about, you know, quality of life for the people that can access those.
Representative Bill. Thank you, Chair Wagenius. well, this has been an interesting conversation this morning. That kind of like point counterpoint.
we have one large paper.
I'm in looking at this and just trying to think in terms of being a state representative. I think that I would agree with Representative Ansel that the motorized people are paying their way, no matter how you cut it. If you look at walking, hiking trails, based on your information, there's 46% of the population that's paying taxes that don't use those trails at all. And in the case of bicycles, you're looking at 70% of the taxpayers who don't bicycle, that pay income taxes into the general fund, which that gets maintained for these trails, that don't use them at all. But yet in the case of motorized, we're paying $100. I don't hear anybody complaining or crabbing in the snowmobile community that we're particularly short of money and that we're paying our way. So I guess my question is, so that was my counterpoint. My question is, has the department ever proposed any kind of a maintenance assessment, trail pass, permit, along the lines of the, again, the cross-country skiers are paying their ways because they have a trail permit to cross-country ski, and so they're doing their part. Has the department ever proposed anything like that? The department. Now, I think that there's been others that have, legislators, but I was thinking the department ever tried to come up with a solution.
Madam Chair, Representative Bill, we have discussed the issue many times with our stakeholders and our various groups, and there's not a lot of support for it throughout members of various clubs, local trail clubs, different councils that are out there, so we did not move forward with anything like that. Most of our fees have been based upon the needs and the wants of the users. You'll recall several years ago, actually I believe it was 2 years ago, we instituted a horse trail pass. The horse riders came in and asked us to create a dedicated stream of funding for them so that we could provide maintenance and trail development, acquisition, the services that they wanted to see. Your snowmobile trail pass bill you carried several years ago, at the request of MinUSA, put another trail pass fee on top of those users so they could have their money to develop their trails, and it was very successful. So with those kinds of supports, we move forward with these issues. Without that support, it's very difficult for us to move forward establishing a pass for these types of users.
Well, Madam Chair. Well, I think that speaks then to the wisdom of the motorized groups. Because, I mean, they've addressed this. Now, if I were walking and hiking and I knew that every time you wanted to build a trail or maintain a trail that you took some money out of the bonding bill to build another trail, but there's no money to maintain it, and that at least up in my area, half the time they're sweeping the deer crap off of it and the leaves, it would seem to me that I wouldn't want a trail pass either to hike or bike or walk or bicycle. They're pretty smart compared to us, where we just decide we're going to take it upon ourselves to pay our own bills. I'd like to investigate some type of a remediation to this problem in the coming years. And I'm not trying to vilify him, but we've been kind of having some fun, point counterpoint. So I'm having a little fun too here.
Well, Representative Bill, just to continue the fun. As a Minneapolis resident, I have heard again and again and again from our parks folks about how many people come in from the suburbs and use our system, mm-hmm. and walk around the lakes in my district, and yet Minneapolis residents pay a whole fee. So the debate has been had many, many times. There is, as far as Minneapolis and everybody trying to think of a way, there is no solution to the problem you have just raised. I mean, I wouldn't want DNR to spend gadget time working on something that folks have been spending time on for multiple years, and there is not a solution to that problem as far as I can see. Representative, I think it's Hansen, Mo, and then, we've got a bunch.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick follow-up, I guess, and we may need some more parks and trails in the suburbs if we're building out and we need to provide recreation. My question was on something completely different for Mr. Bull. Are you responsible for the critical area program? Is it your area, the division, or?
No, we're not.
Okay, so which division is responsible for the critical area program?
I understand it's the Waters division.
Okay.
Okay. Representative Small, Representative Ethan, I think there was another question. We are going to absolutely finish this today, so.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just in this point, counterpoint, just a couple of things I'd like to add. I know Representative Dill knows how much a groomer costs, how many hundreds of thousands of dollars, and I know the North Star Snowmobile Club in Bemidji has six of them, so several million dollars worth of equipment that we have at that facility paid for by grant and aid dollars. So again, relative cost is pretty significant. And to my suburban friends, Representative Scalzi, we have Metro Parks, Three River Park District, other regional park districts which I used to work for years ago, that many of us access and get state dollars, and I think many of us would continue to support the development of that.
We're going to have one more question, then we're going to get the rest of the presentation, so it's all going to get done.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's been a lot of focus here on the costs of these trails, but I think that we also need to look at the benefits, the economic benefits that they offer, and you'd mentioned that there are economic benefits to our communities that have these trails, and I was wondering if there's been an assessment done of the economic benefits, what kind of economic impact do the trails have, and how does it break down as far as trails for biking and hiking and trails for ATV and motorized activities? I know Representative Moe has talked about the increased cost associated with maintaining trails for motorized vehicles. Do they have increased benefits economically for the areas that they're located?
Madam Chair, Representative Eakin, we do have some of those studies. They've been completed for a variety of uses. I can think of an economic snowmobile study, an ATV study that was performed, and also on our bike trails, and I'd be happy to get that information to the chair so that you can have the entire group see that.
Okay, and Madam Chair, is there a significant difference in the economic benefits between the non-motorized and motorized trails, just generally?
You know, it's been a long time since I've pored over those. I think the snowmobile study that I recall, snowmobilers had a tendency to stay longer in an area, and at least in one study that I noticed, the bicyclist stayed a shorter period of time. That's one example that I can remember. But I really want to look at the studies.
Thank you.
I'd appreciate you looking at the studies because I think the folks from Lanesboro that kind of started us all off in this direction would say that was a trail there was an explosion. So, if I'm correct about that one.
Absolutely correct.
All right. If you continue and finish up here, and then we'll take questions at the end.
Madam Chair, members, going on to the legislative initiatives, the first one dealing with the snowmobile grant and aid system or increase is found on page 75 of your budget book or 35 of the fact sheets is where we talk about this. And we touched on this a little bit already. 2005, the legislature established the snowmobile trail pass. The receipts on that have been about $1.5 million annually. The first year, 2006, it generated $3.15 million due to the fact you could buy either a one-year pass or a three-year pass. Many people went for the three-year pass rather than the one-year pass, so we saw an influx of revenue. This change item just allows us to access some of those dollars that are in the account to spend for the grant and aid system. As we saw, there's about 280,000 snowmobiles out there. What we're looking to do is about $500,000 of this will go out to grant and aid for grant and aid capital improvements. $50,000 of it will go to grant and aid trust fund lease and permit payments. $50,000 for grant and aid maps and $100,000 for grant and aid signs. So all of these dollars will be going back out to the local clubs that are dependent on these dollars for operation and education. The next change item, it's something we've discussed before. As we just were discussing the number of all-terrain vehicles in registration, 1984 there was 12,000. Today, over 240,000 ATVs. The gas tax, underfunded gas tax appropriation that's in statute in Chapter 296 was based upon that 12,000 registered vehicle number. We've done a study with Department of Transportation and other groups, which we can get copies for you, that estimates that percentage now with those numbers of registered vehicles, that it should be 0.27%. So we're asking to change that underfunded gas tax allocation from 0.15 to 0.27%. It will provide an increase of about $630,000. You'll see this is discussed in your fact sheets on page 13. What we're looking to do with these funds, $215,000 in 08 and $307,000 in 09 will go right out to the grant and aid clubs for grant and aid trail work. $50,000 in 08 and $225,000 in 09 we'll be using for our off-highway vehicle safety and conservation grant program. And then $50,000 in 08 and $100,000 in 09 will be used for the maintenance of minimum maintenance county and state forest roads that are part of the system that these folks ride on. So this is a bill that's actually introduced. It'll be moving forward hopefully within the budget as well, and we'll need to go to transportation and taxes. The next item, Single Johnson Wallet Barreau Water Access Funding. This is a technical correction, if you want to think of it that way, related to our federal funds. Federal requirements require us to match to appropriate about, or not about, 15% of our funds received through these programs to water access funding. So these change levels, which is, let's see here.
$32,000
in the first year, and then it's $107,000 in FY09 are in direct relation to the federal funds we receive, and we just need to correct the way that they're being allocated in state statute through the accounts. Non-motorized forest recreation. This is, again, part of our DNR internal budget reallocations, as I mentioned, using the building blocks that we had with our general fund dollars. The non-motorized forest trails were turned over to the Department of Trails and Waterways, much like our forest campgrounds are now operated by the Division of Parks. Division of Forestry, in the past several years, I shouldn't say past several years, about 4 years ago, it was determined that they're in the business of providing forestry services, silviculture-related activities, not recreational-based activities, so they do help us and we work together with them. Trails and Waterways operates our forest trail system. The non-motorized forest trail system was transferred over to Trails and Waterways, but there was no funding dedicated to that, no funding stream, as we discussed some of those issues just recently. What this is, it's a $400,000 general fund reallocation to provide work on 392 miles of hiking trails, 65 miles of mountain bike trails, 372 miles of horseback trails, and 173 miles of cross-country ski trails. We'll be going in, grading, crowning the surfaces, or doing what we need to do, make sure we have a solid surface there for people to walk on. Signage, educational information where applicable, things of that nature will be coming out of this appropriation. And then the last one, a $75,000 reallocation again for our State Wild and Scenic River Program. Used to develop easements, coordinate responses for easement violations, education, develop a schedule for landowner communications regarding easements, and do all of the work that we need for our scenic, wild, and recreation rivers. And if there's no other questions, that was kind of the very fast discussion of the changes, but I think they're all pretty straightforward related to dedicated accounts. This just shows what we're looking at in the proposed 08-09 budget that the governor's budget represents, and then the table with the change items.
Representative
Tadbury. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a statement that a lot of people think I only support snowmobile and ATV trails, and that's absolutely not true. I want to see the maintenance on these state bicycle and hiking trails. We need to do that. I'm all for that. I just want to emphasize the fact that we also have these other concerns. We do have a lot more ATV registrations coming on, and we need places for those folks to go so they can ride responsibly. But that's another issue later on. We'll be discussing that more as we go through this session, I'm sure. But for the testifiers, I'd like to, and for the benefit of the committee, I'd like to have them explain the differences between state trails, grant-made trails, and DNR trails. I think there's a very much of a different perspective there, and grant-made trails are primarily snowmobile trails, ATV trails, that sort of thing, and they are paid for with dedicated funds, and here I'm explaining it myself, but I'd like them to explain it so they can tell you. But those grant-made trails are local units of government and local clubs taking care of those trails, and the DNR gets that money out to those units of government and clubs so they can maintain that. And I don't believe there are any state ATV trails or motorized. I know there's some state snowmobile trail miles, but very, very few. So if the testifiers could explain the differences of those three trails, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, Representative Hackbarth. Starting out with state trails. State trails are trails that the legislature has specifically authorized and instructed the department to purchase and develop. Most of these are what we call our corridor trails. They're really the backbone to the state's trail system. Many of these are on railroad grades. Many of these are bicycle trails in the summer. Many of these are snowmobile trails or cross-country ski trails in the winter. They serve multiple use, multiple purpose. The Grant Mead trails are exactly as Representative Hackbarth had mentioned. The state provides the funding through registrations, gas tax. We provide funding back to local units of government who then contract most of the time with local clubs to actually perform the work, the maintenance, those kinds of things on grant and aid trails. DNR trails, I think that's what they were referred to, are what we would kind of coin the term trails within our state forest. So they're not necessarily a corridor type of trail. They are administered and operated by the state, by Trails and Waterways, but they're in our state forest. And those are, you know, scattered throughout the 58 state forests that we have. We provide a variety of opportunities, non-motorized and motorized opportunities in those state forest trails. So those are basically the three types or kinds of trails.
Thank you.
Are there other questions for members? Representative
Clark. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering, kind of along this same line, is there a plan, a strategic plan or anything in place to look at the capacity of our forests and our state parks for increasing numbers of all of these ways of using them, both motorized and non-motorized? And I just, along that line, I was looking at the number of miles, for example, for mountain bikes in our state forest is 65 miles. I don't know if that's projected or that's currently available. And I see that the number of miles for snowmobiles is 19,500 miles. Quite a big difference. And I'm just wondering, as a person who wanted to go biking several times in state parks and found that the bikes are not allowed, and a couple of them have gone to, but there are snowmobile trails there, and there are other access for motorized vehicles there. What is the plan for capacity for any of these ways of our citizens enjoying the park? And is it just unlimited? So if we have X number more of ATVs, or X number more of snowmobiles, or X number more of bicycles, is it just unlimited, or is there some sort of capacity design that you're working from?
Madam Chair, Representative Clark, our state forests certainly have a limited capacity, and to that point, in the presentation, I talked about how difficult it is becoming as we have increased users and less space to put these users. And that also includes our state forests. There is a planning effort that the department is currently undertaking to plan for both motorized and non-motorized uses of our state forests. We're about halfway through that. The legislature instructed us to evaluate all 58 state forests in your 2003 session, and that's to be completed by 2008. So we are making great progress on that. With regard to your question on the mountain bike trail, that is in a state forest. Generally, I think most of those mileages are in the Birch Lake State Forest, where we have designated mountain bike trail system. But in essence, you could ride a mountain bike on the majority of the trails in state forests. They serve multiple use, hiking. You could certainly mountain bike on those. Many of them are open for horseback riding, those kinds of things. The mileage that you identified as snowmobile mileage, the 19,500, that's the mileage figure that is completed through the Grant and Aid Snowmobile Program, where local units of government have worked with clubs. The majority of that system is on private land, and those folks that are interested in that sport have secured permission to exist on that private land to enjoy their sport.
Madam Chair, I'm just wondering, do we have the breakdown of the mileage in our state parks and state forests for that, and then also there's nothing that says what the ATV mileage is either. And I'm just wondering again, not every state park allows bicycling. So even though it may be like the trail to handle it, it's prohibited. So I'm trying to understand in some of our state parks, for example, there's snowmobiling, but but bicycles are not allowed on the same trail. And I know it's different seasons and different wear and tear, but I'm just wondering, are there plans for any change in that in state parks or other parts of our publicly owned properties? And I don't know if there's time to get all those answers now, Madam Chair, but I sure would like to know.
I think we are running out of time, and if those answers could be given to the committee as a whole,
we could provide that information.
I'd be glad to hand them out. Representative Gill, I know you have a question. I was wondering if you would be so gracious as to move the minutes of February 6th first.
February 6th? I actually did look at them.
Thank you. Representative Gill moves the approval of the minutes of February 6th. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? The minutes are approved. Representative Dill has the final word.
Nice question.
Maybe not the final.
No, I don't know if I was listening to Mr. Bowe's testimony. I just wanted to make one point to that. You did state that the snowmobile trails are on private land, vastly on private land. But also there's been a moratorium on new trail development with the grant and aid dollars. So I'll give you an example. As a trail administrator, we recently connected the community of Ray, as small as it is, to the Corridor Trail, the Arrowhead Corridor Trail, which is a corridor trail that's operated by the state and the department, but we were unable to acquire any funding of any kind for grooming or development or brushing or signing or any. We did that totally at our own expense, the club's expense, because there is a moratorium statewide on the further funding of snowmobile trails new to the program. So just a piece of information. It's not that particular program. I don't see it growing much more. I'd like it to grow 7 more miles, though. Thank you.
With that, and that was the final word.
Madam Chair, just briefly, I'm handing out your homework.
Thank you for doing that. We appreciate the ability to see them in advance, and I think that will cut down the number of questions that we have on Tuesday.
Great.
With that, the meeting is...